Welcome to Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. I'm Catherine Cole in Washington. Ellis Paul is my guest in the Roots studio this week. When I played one of his songs a month or so ago, I called him singer, songwriter, author, artist, playwright Ellis Paul, and that was not an exaggeration. You'll learn all about this man of many talents in the next hour. But how about a song first? Maybe one from the new CD?
This is called Chasing Beauty, and it's the title track to the new album. And it's really about freedom, being on the road for the first time, that idea of you're young and the highway's in front of you, and you have no chains of your parents or any ties that bind you to holding still. It's called Chasing Beauty. Let's shoot out the satellites. We're throwing wishes at the twilight. And are you raging, blazing, occasionally raising a bottle to the night? You said every dream that could cross our lips lies just beyond our fingertips. I caught some I let slip right through my fingers time, but we pull our track. Time was an open road, and you can't look back when you're chasing beauty. Beauty on an open like a matchbox light, like a train on fire, blazing in the moonlight. Are you alright? I'm alive and wide awake. The highway rises, turns and falls like an Oklahoma waterfall. Come jump in. The water was cool and your words held promises, love. Oh, we both lost track. Love was an open road. You can't look back when you're chasing beauty. We are refugees on the Mississippi. Oh, we are runaways at the Golden Gate. We're chasing beauty. Oh, little Miss Satellite, you'll never be captured like a box kite. You will never be held down by a small town watching this world spin circles in the night. You said a woman in motion stays in motion, can't be stopped by mountain man or ocean. Tell me, is your world so fast you can't stand still at a crossroads time? We both lost track. A time was an open road, and you can't look back when you're chasing
Chasing Beauty is the title track to Ellis Paul's newest CD. Welcome. I don't know how long we've talked about this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing it. It's great. I'm glad it all worked out finally.
For somebody that lives pretty close to us, I mean, in the scheme of things.
Right. Yeah. Just a couple hours away.
I mean, it really did take a long, long time. The new CD, Chasing Beauty, I don't know where to start, whether we should talk about the songs first or the art first, because, you know, the art on all your projects, is almost, I would say, almost as good as the stuff that's inside.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's not often that we get somebody that comes through that is also, you could have done this full time if you wanted to.
Well, I don't know. I need to work on it a lot more, I think, to feel like I was a professional artist. But, it's the only place that I can actually express that part of my mind. And so I'm grateful that I have it.
So this was not something that you did all your life, the pen and ink stuff?
I did. I just got afraid of it when it was time to go to college, about studying it professionally. I mean, in hindsight, maybe I should have, because certainly folk music has as many issues as being, an artist of any kind. So, I think I have a right-sided brain, and art is in there, and so is music, and so is writing, and I want to do all of them as much as I can.
And you do, though. Your art pops up on your projects, and I've seen it on posters and other things.
Yeah, I've done festival posters, and I've been asked to do children's books and things like that, so... As a hobby, it's actually pretty fun, and I like that there's no pressure, and I don't have to chase the dollar with it because I'm doing this. At least I have a place where I can put it.
The cover art for this record, Chasing Beauty, tell us a little bit about it. We're going to direct people to your website so they can see it, the ones that are not watching on video.
Well, I wanted to combine images from the record itself. It's a pen and ink drawing with pencil. It has a beautiful woman on it, and there's a song about the Empire State Building, and I've put the Empire State Building in the lower corner. And then there's a story about a Barnstormer pilot named Jimmy Angel, who's an actual very famous pilot in his day. He actually discovered Angel Falls in Venezuela. He was looking for places to gold mine and silver mine, and flying over Venezuela, and he saw this enormous waterfall. And there's been a lot of arguments down in Venezuela on whether it should be changed to its native Indian name or not, instead of his name, because the natives knew it was there all the time. But he brought it out to the public world. But he was also this great barnstorming pilot who had a flying circus and flew around the Midwest in the 1930s doing stunt flying.
How romantic.
Yeah, completely. And kind of below the radar kind of guy. But I thought he deserved a song, so I wrote one for him. And so that's where the art comes from, and it's sort of a combination of all these images from the record, and somehow it makes absolutely no sense.
Except when you're
reality.
Looking at it.
Yeah, when you look at it, it looks fine, but somehow she's above the Empire State Building and on a building herself, and for some reason there's a wing walker on the plane, and...
And she looks pretty modern. We don't see that many wingwalkers these days.
Right.
Well, except that in an air show, maybe.
You would, but maybe not on a plane that big.
It's. But you're the artist.
That's
so,
right.
Hey.
It's my mind and my record, so I get to do whatever I want. And it's a pretty image to look at. So, it's captivating. It has some drama and some beauty and some adventure in it. So it managed to capture what I wanted it to, and we decided to use it on the cover. So.
Well, for people that have not heard me talk about you when we played your other songs, I guess we need to start at the beginning a little bit.
Okay.
You're New Englander.
I am, yeah. I'm from Maine.
Which is way up there, one of our smaller states.
Yes.
Up on the upper right side of the map, if you're following along.
Right. By New England standards, it is the biggest of all the New England states, but there's some tiny ones in there. There's, it's certainly bigger than Delaware, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont.
Right. But it's a beautiful state. I mean, it has everything. It's got water. It's got mountains. It's got trees.
Farmland.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got basically everything you need except a lot of heat. Right?
There's some difficult winters there, but those are beautiful too. I've traveled every state. I love Alaska. Alaska is the only one in my mind that really competes with it beauty-wise. California is obviously gorgeous, and the Rockies, mountain states. But just the variety of the landscapes there and how really beautiful they are. And deep woods. I mean, it's got the deepest wilderness you can find in the lower 50 in my mind. You can really get lost for months and months and months in the northern Maine woods if you wanted. And It's got a mile-high mountain, Mount Katahdin, and my brother-in-law's a lobsterman, and my father and grandfather are potato farmers, and so I really feel
excellent
like...
Excellent potatoes up there.
Yeah. I come from that stock of Mainers. Fortunately, I didn't have farming or lobstering in my blood, so here I am doing this. Yeah.
So you escaped.
I did, yeah.
But you were an athletic youngster.
Yep. I went to college on a track scholarship. I went to Boston College, which is a Division I school. And
BU.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
uh-huh.
All right. Crosstown rivals.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Good thing we're sitting on opposite sides of the room here.
Right.
There's a dividing line.
We should play
that's
air
right
hockey
there
and get it over with.
You keep on your side of that court over there. I mean, you could have been a real competitor.
A competitive runner. Yeah. I wouldn't. You know, if I had given into the lifestyle, that lifestyle is really difficult because you're running, eating, and you're sleeping, and you're really not doing much else, and you're not making a lot of money unless you're one of the best in the world. So, the commitment to it is really incredible, and this is why people from Kenya and Ethiopia, all these amazing African countries, they develop so many of these great distance runners because they can go out internationally, and even if they win a few $1,000 in a road race in America, they can go back to Africa, and suddenly that $3,000-$4,000 is actually worth enough to buy a building and start a school or build a church, and they've become the best distance runners in the world because of that.
It's a great sport for aspirational athletes.
Yeah, and it has to be because it's got to be more than just the love of the sport. It's not like you always picture in these old movies about competitive track and field that, it's these amateur athletes from Great Britain who are all college educated and they already are rich. They don't do it for the money. It's an amateur sport because they can afford to be amateurs. And now, the people that really are truly best in the world go after it because they need to change the plight of their family and their villages and their homes. And you get Jamaicans who are making tons of money sprinting and the African distance runners. But we do have probably the best collection of distance runners in the U.S. that we've ever had in the last 20 years. So
distance running, though, is different, though, than real short speed
it
sprinting.
It is, yeah. I mean, the commitment to training is a lot different, and the lifestyle is a lot more rigorous and a little less glamorous. But
do you run at all still?
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to run every day. Can't you tell?
Yeah, well, I was asking for the people listening at home.
I look incredibly fit.
The people listening at home that are not watching.
Yes, I am trying to stay healthy, and I still am an enormous fan of it as a sport, and it's not a big sport in the States. It doesn't get much love here in the newspapers or on television, but internationally, it's really important to a lot of countries, and their stars become political figures and people like Sebastian Coe.
Yeah, sir.
Yeah, right, sir.
Or
right.
Lord, I believe.
Lord Coe, right, yeah. Is sir below Lord?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And then you get kings and dukes and...
you have to be born into that,
right,
usually.
Yeah, I don't know that whole scheme. That's an interesting one.
I asked about the running because I know somebody that used to run a lot and then after an injury couldn't run as much and found it hard to just run a little.
Yeah.
So preferred to do something else because every time he just ran a little, he remembered he used to be able to run a lot.
It's hard. I stopped competitive running in my early 20s and I didn't start running again until my late 40s. And so much has changed, sadly. My feet, for one, and my Achilles tendons, they don't accommodate the weight that I've gained and are the age that I've gained very well. And so it's very different. It's nowhere near as enjoyable. And, I used to feel like a feather and I could go for hours and hours. And now 4 miles is like running with anvils on my back.
I think that's why people start bicycling.
They do.
Yeah. There are a lot of gentlemen that I know in their 50s that ride their bikes for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles every weekend. And part of it's the camaraderie. But
certainly, and then, you know, and the get-ups, you know, they're really into those.
Well, that's it too.
Those
yes.
bright clothing. They really want to be parrots in another life.
Yeah, and, I think so.
running is more like throwing on. I mean, I will throw on anything just to cover my body, and I'll go just as ragged t-shirt with paint stains on it.
Well, you don't need anything
else,
right?
You just need some shoes. There's no aesthetic value outside of the running shoe. And
well, yes, I have to say some of the ones I'm thinking of are dandies in their real life.
They don't make subtle running shoes, and I don't know why that's, you know.
So you can find them when your eyes are half closed,
I guess,
right?
So. Yeah, right, exactly. So you feel like you're getting energy from them, so they make them look like they're neon lights. So you feel like somehow you're powering them and they're powering you. And
well, maybe it's a throwback. And I'm probably wrong about this, but when I was growing up, you know, I think your choices were white, red, or blue.
Right.
So maybe the people running the companies now are thinking back to those days and saying, you know, I wish when I was a child I had an option.
Right.
Well, enough about shoes. You're talking about your music. So there you were. You gave up running. Did you just say, I'm going to become a songwriter, or is this something you'd always been doing since you were a little kid?
I was understanding that my DNA was telling me I was going to be a creative person from very a young age, and I didn't know whether I was going to do art or write or be a musician, because I was doing all three and loving mm-hmm. it. And my parents were good as far as providing me with the tricks of that trade, the crayons and the trumpets and the you know, and the pencils and papers to write stories. So I knew I was going to do something creative, and here I am. Songwriting fits my DNA profile. I have my version of ADD. I can't write a novel, but I can write a 3-minute song, and I write very visually. So mm-hmm. adapting words into sort of a very visual kind of art, because hopefully in everyone's head, and certainly in mine when I'm writing them, I'm seeing pictures, and I'm just trying to put the pictures on paper with words and coloring it with the music and the guitar, which I love. And
so play another song for us.
All right. This is a song about my daughter, Sophie. Song of opposites, really. It's called Hold Me, Scold Me. Button up my shirt, your eyes look hurt. I'm leaving, but I ain't gone long. This is where I belong. You got blue eyes like your mama, your daddy's little drama. You sing just like a whippoorwill, and you just can't stand still. You hold me, scold me, you're good for trouble, but the trouble ain't bad. You change me, nothing's the same for me, you're the best love I've ever had. You get hotter than a wood stove, sweeter than a peach grove. You're growing rose, I can't stop time. I can't believe that you're mine. You hold me, scold me, you're good for trouble, but that trouble ain't bad. You change me, nothing's the same to me. You're the best love I've ever had.
Guitar sounds great.
Thank you. It's a beautiful guitar. I have to say, I'm very much in love with it.
And it's quite artistic also. I'm looking, I don't know what to look at first, whether it's the horses racing up the neck.
Yeah, it's got a three-tone inlay, a three-tone wood inlay of three horses running up the neck, and beautiful. It's a sharp cutaway. It's made out of Peruvian cocobolo. It's a Taylor guitar, but it's a custom Taylor, so it's kind of a one-of-a-kind model. It's a concert-sized model, and the cocobolo is very beautiful because it's got a strip of blonde running through it where the sap came through.
Yeah.
And this is all one piece of wood. It looks
Yeah,
and I got lucky and found it, and whoever made it at Taylor. I know Bob Taylor, who owns the company, mm-hmm. actually picked the wood out and then set his luthiers to it, and they put a lot of love into it.
Well, I know that somebody always emails and says, oh, that sounded really good. Do you know what they played? So I've started asking now because, you know, someone is going to ask. So it's just luck of the draw that's what you ended up with.
It is. I found it, so I chose mm-hmm. to buy it. I found it in a store rather than went to mm-hmm. the company and asked them to make it. So, and you know, that's kind of the way. Oftentimes with artist deals, they'll make you a guitar, mm-hmm. but you don't know what you're getting.
Right.
And oftentimes it'll be great, but you can find spectacular guitars when you're out on the road looking around. And
are you one of those people that does that? I mean, I do have friends that I've maybe met for lunch when they're here in town, and the first thing they say is, you know, look what I just found, or
right.
where do you think I could go? Where shall I go? Yeah. Are you always just, if you see a guitar shop,
I'm not always on the hunt. I was on a hunt at the time I found this. Mm-hmm. I have to say that. I was looking for a really good partner in crime, and the guitar is my partner in crime. And so I just was keeping my eye open, and I had lost a guitar at a place called McCabe's in Los Angeles.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
It's a great guitar store. Mm-hmm. But I saw a guitar that was there for 3 years, and I finally decided to go and buy it. And I went there, and I had seen it only a few months before. And when I went in, it had been bought by Neil Young, actually, of all people.
Well.
So he ended up with that one. And I thought to myself, you know, if you see one like that again, you need to just jump on it. And then this one came into my life a year later, and I bought it right off.
Do you write on that guitar?
I do. Yeah, I do. I wrote this whole record on this guitar, actually. And it's good, you know, sometimes it's good to swap out guitars because guitars really, they do bring out different songs, mm-hmm. Different finger picking patterns and things. This guitar does everything well. It strums beautifully and finger picks beautifully. Even though it has an enormous size, it's a very even toned guitar. It's not too heavy on the bass end. And so it's a great writing guitar, great performing guitar. Yeah.
That last song was written for one of your daughters. How'd you feel after hearing that?
She's only seven, mm-hmm. so I think all the nuances are probably lost on her. But she likes the tempo and the danceability of it and the beauty of it, you know.
And the fact that it's hers.
It's hers. It'll be hers forever. And I've written a couple other songs for her sister, but none so specific that it's just about her sister. So I owe Ella, my other daughter, one. As well now.
I'm Catherine Cole. More live music and conversation with Ellis Paul is on the way. You're listening to Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network.
Thank you.
Well, hello again from Washington. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on VOA Music Mix. Ellis Paul is my guest in the Roots studio this week. We're talking about his CD, Chasing Beauty. Ellis told us earlier about the cover art for the project and that one of the drawings was of a wing walker depicting stunt pilot and explorer Jimmy Angel, subject to this next song, Jimmy Angel's Flying Circus. Ellis Paul on Roots and Branches.
Missouri girl with blue sky eyes. Step right up, it's a buckeye. Above the clouds, a kiss, a sigh. Late night stars and last goodbyes. You're waking up the silos, Chicago to St. Louis, taking the town.
Ellis Paul and Jimmy Angel's Flying Circus on Roots and Branches from the CD Chasing Beauty. Ellis is my guest in the Roots studio this week. We were talking before the break about your time as a college athlete. And you stopped running. Just woke up one day and said, I'm a musician.
I got hurt in college, and in the year I took off, I started playing guitar and writing songs. And then I graduated from school, and I competed for a year after college, and I recognized that the workload was not what I wanted to do in my life, that kind of heavy lifting from running every day, twice a day, sometimes three times a day. And so I started falling in love with the guitar, started doing open mics in Boston, and I rose through the ranks. And
tough crowds. I mean, that's not the easiest place to start.
It's the best place to start, though, in a lot of ways, because you're not in the bar scene. It's a folk scene, and so people are really quiet in the rooms. They're giving you all of their attention. People like Dar Williams, Patty Griffin, Martin Sexton, Vance Gilbert, Katie Curtis, Bill Morrissey, Patty Larkin, all these amazing musicians came out of that scene. The list just goes on and on and on. And it was the 90s when singer-songwriters were sort of reviving the entire folk circuit. And we started, all of us, touring, and all of us are still at it.
That's remarkable, really, when you think about it, because it's tough on a lot of levels. I mean, it's not just tough going out and doing it, but it's tough to keep coming up with good material.
I fall into this gap of being a songwriter, a folk musician, and a singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. And the singer-songwriter tends to look inward. Mm-hmm. The folk singer tends to look outward. Oh. And the songwriter tends to write commercially. So I have all these avenues, and I've been doing it that way ever since the beginning. So I can write for country people, and I can write for movies and TV. And I can look at my own life and write about it and have it be introspective and, and thoughtful and quiet. And I can look at the world that I travel in and write about it. And I never serve a record up with just one hat on. I do it in ways that kind of combine all three of those things. And
can you write anywhere?
Yeah, I have to.
Well, because there are some people that say to me, oh, I can't write on the road. I have to be home.
No, I have to write when I can write, because my time is so busy with either I'm with the kids or either I'm on the road and working. So I have to write in airplanes, in cars. You know, I have to write late night in hotel rooms, or sometimes early in the morning when I wake up. And you know, and I'm a person that has 20 ideas written down, and I'm fleshing them out all the time and writing more and more and recording on my iPhone. And I just finished this record, but I've got a Christmas project I need to finish. I have another kid's record coming, and I've just started writing adult songs again. So there's just no time for me not to write. I have to write all the time.
And I suppose you don't want to not write, because you don't want to waste anything, right?
Yeah. There's sort of an, you know, in the back of my mind, I just saw this documentary on Joan Rivers, and it was done when she was 75, which was just a few years ago. And what hit me remarkably about her is how she's still driven by the art form, and age hasn't at all affected that drive, or the ability to be absolutely funny and on the edge and on the progressive edge of comedy. You know, she's still that great. And that's sort of where I want it to be when I get to be in my 70s. I still want to be invested like I am now and in the writing, and because it's the fire that runs my life. It fuels not only, it fuels me passionately, but it also pays for the bills. It feeds my children. It feeds my ex-wives. Does all of the things it's supposed to do, and does it well. So I want to keep going. I want to be like Johnny Cash, Pete Seeger, you know, all of the people that got old doing it.
I saw that documentary also, and what struck me about her, and I think about Johnny Cash, maybe not so much about Pete Seeger, although I can't say that for certain. She was certainly aware of what everybody around her was doing, what the younger people were doing.
Yes.
You know, she knew what the competition was.
Right.
And that she was perfectly capable of besting them.
Totally.
Because she was there first, you know, and you can't, people can copy you, but nobody can do it as well as the original. Really?
Yeah, and I also think by keeping in touch with what's coming up behind you, I've studied Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie until I'm blue in the face, and I love them, and they're always will be my heroes. And then I've studied my peers for inspiration and studied them to death. And now I'm looking at the people that are coming up, and I want to know why are they getting popular? Why are they great? What's their art? What do they really have to give from my perspective? And that keeps the fire going too. I get as much inspiration from those people as I do from the guys that I've studied all my life.
And it's interesting too, watching audiences react to all these people and who they are and what they're looking at and what their attention span is and everything else.
Right.
I mean, it's like a little focus group every time you sit and watch somebody listen to a song.
Yeah. And people's career paths always are unique to themselves and their eras. And I started in the early 90s, and the path back then was, you know, you got signed to a record label, you hit the road, the record label paved the road for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of the internet, you basically live or die by the internet. It has nothing to do with record labels. You still have to be on the road constantly, but you have to be your own record label and your own business, really, fully on now.
Well, you've been doing that for a while. I mean, you don't just turn everything over to somebody and... And
I can't, really. I mean, I have a manager that I trust and love.
You work together.
Yeah.
Yeah, on everything.
Yeah, and he's really reacting to what my goals and dreams are. His job is to sort of bring that stuff to fruition, you know, but I'm the one setting the goals. And, you know, he's the one cracking the whip after I set the goals. He's sort of just like a coach. In order to accomplish that, we've got to make this path look like this. And, but, you know, we've been lucky, too, to have a great committed fan base. And I don't play to people that just come to one show. I've got people coming to 200, 300 shows over the years, like they do to Fish concerts and Grateful Dead concerts. And there's a commitment among the people that really get it. And they're paying for my records now. We're doing crowdfunding, and we raised over $100,000 for this record, which is phenomenal. And, you know, I'm very lucky that I'm here instead of starting in the year 2014.
Well, we'll talk about the crowdfunding and stuff a little bit more after another song,
sure. Please. This song is called Empire State. It's actually a song about the Empire State Building, and it's written from the perspective of the Empire State Building. So anybody that's been to New York who's listening can think of that big old building and recognize that it was built, started being built in 1929, right at the height of the Great Depression when it was starting. Here's this symbol of capitalism being put up over New York, funded by the richest people in the country and built by the lowest form of immigrant worker, you know? People just starving, just trying to work, working night shifts, 100 floors up in the air. Stealing girders, they laid my cornerstone in 29. President Hoover threw a switch and the sky was mine. Crowds are lining up Fifth Avenue, Mr. DuPont and his top hat smiling. Cameras keep flashing, Wall Street's crashing, but the Empire State's come rising. On the Tower of Babel, you want stories, man, I've got stats. I rose up on the cradle with the crack of a hammer, the stutter of a jack. I prayed on Black Sunday for chick-or-treat parade. I'm an American story. That's how the Empire State was made. Mohawks on I-beams. There's only sky on the 100th floor. Italians in blue jeans. Irishmen who came here for more. Swinging hammers at halfway chairs, it's better than the old brand line. This night shift, gypsy, see the lights of Poughkeepsie, through the clouds where my steel beams shine. On the Tower of Babel, you want stories, man, I've got staff. I rose up on the cradle through the gorilla off of my back. I cried that September Tuesday when the towers came crumbling down. For as long as I'm standing, I'll be the guardian of New York town. From the seventh wonder of the world, the world is nothing but a tiny pearl. I'm the Tower of Babel, you want stories, but I've got staff. Stutter of a jack. I don't know what will come tomorrow. I'm standing strong today. I was forged in steel, the king of the newsreel. That's how the Empire State is gonna stay.
The song is Empire State from Ellis Paul, and his new CD is Chasing Beauty. And if you were to go online, you could find all kinds of pictures from when that building was being built and dedicated and stuff. It's amazing stuff. Well, so what is it about the Empire State Building that captured your
attention? You know, it reminded me a lot of that song Steve Goodman wrote about. Arlo Guthrie had the hit with it. It was City of New Orleans. It's sung by from this perspective of the train. Good morning, America. How are you? Don't you know me? I'm you know, I am the train they call the city of New Orleans. I've gone 500 miles when the day is done. And even though the train was talking, the song is about the demise of the railroad as a passenger vehicle. You know, people were driving and hitting the highways. So he was telling this bigger story. And of course, the Empire State Building, it's so emblematic, I guess, of our country, because it represents what immigrants could do that were just arriving off the boat. There was a different language being spoken on every single floor of that building as it was being raised. How they ever got it up so quickly,
God knows.
You know, they had Mohawk Indians coming in from Canada who were riveters who basically built the whole city of New York. They were one group of people, and then they had Russian immigrants and Frenchmen and Irishmen and let alone just Americans who had been, you know, multi-generational contractors and things working on it. Then the DuPont family was funding it. Governor Smith, former New York governor, was arranging the whole thing to get it. So there was this sort of the elites of New York were putting it up with all these very low-paid construction workers who could barely speak English. It's just a remarkable story. And then the Great Depression happened, and it sat empty for many, many, many years. And you go in there today, and it's still a fabulous building to look at.
It's an incredible building. I mean, it's outside and inside. So we were talking crowdfunding for a minute.
Sure.
You know, you were in on that at the beginning. And for people that aren't familiar with what we're talking about, basically, you've turned to your fans, your long-term fans, and said, I need to do something.
Right.
And I would love for you to maybe pay me in advance for what I'm producing. Or do you trust me? And do you want to be a shareholder in this proposition?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, they get stuff up front. I mean, essentially what record labels always were banks. They were funding it like a bank in that you had to pay them back through your portion of profits on the record until they were paid back.
And sometimes you never saw a cent.
Well, you wouldn't see a cent from a store sale or an online sale because all that money was going back to pay them their percentage, which they get first, and then you pay them your percentage of the project until. And so it was always not a good setup. And this has been going on for centuries, and artists were always the lowest person on the totem pole, and they should have always been the first person on the totem pole.
Because without the artist...
it's
there would be nothing.
It's their art and it's their vision, and certainly the financial side of stuff and marketing side of stuff is really important. But to see some of these older artists struggling who had big records in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and they don't have anything now when all those Fat Cat record label people did, it's sad. But it's a different era now, and now I'm saying, if you would like to invest in my next project, there's a tier system. On the lower end of the tier, you just get an advanced copy of the record that's signed by me. And then it goes up to getting backstage passes. You get a guitar. You get house concerts. You get a lifetime pass to shows, going up to $10,000 worth of contributions. And then we try and provide people with something financially that matches that donation.
Were you surprised at how well it worked?
Yeah, I'm surprised. It's a different world now. The first time I did it, hardly anyone was doing it. And we had 300 or 400 contributors, and we raised $100,000. So each one was giving the average was quite high for the amount of money we got. And then this time around, because there's more people doing it and people are spreading their money around to other artists, we had far more contributors, but people were contributing less money. And I suspect that the next time around, in 2 or 3 years when I do this again, that there'll be more people giving less money.
How important is it for an artist to get a song in a television show or a movie?
Well, I guess, you know, the way I look at it is every little building block counts. You're building kind of a pyramid, and you want people to see it from a distance. So you're hoping for the great pyramid. Every one of those is a block. You know, every little thing today is a block. This is going to go out worldwide, so it's a fairly big block for me. If I get it in a Jim Carrey movie, a song in a Jim Carrey movie, that's a really big block. In of itself, not so much, but in conjunction with all the other things I do, all the touring, all the little radio stations I play, the little small town newspaper that runs an article, or the New York Times that has a little blurb on me, all those combine to form that pyramid. You know, nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd, and that more and more people will come to you when they see it. But these little moments count, you know, and the movie stuff has been great. I mean, the song I had in the Jim Carrey movie, Me, Myself, and Irene, the Farrelly Brothers put it out, and I look at YouTube, and it's got 2 million likes and hits, and the next song is maybe, you know, a couple hundred thousand. So it's significantly more popular because it was in the movie.
I can't remember who I was with, but I was selling T-shirts for somebody because the person that was supposed to do it didn't show up. And I remember the guy coming up to buy a T-shirt said, oh, I saw her name in the credits of the movie or the TV show.
Yeah.
And I came to the show, and I was really surprised to see 400 other people here. I didn't realize
how well-known they were, right? Yeah.
Right. I thought that this was my discovery.
Right. Yeah.
And he said, then how can I find other people like this? Right. I like this kind of music. What is it? And then you realize that there is a whole world out there that loves what you do and doesn't know what it is.
Yeah.
And doesn't know how to find you.
Loves music, but has never been to see a live show.
Doesn't know it exists, really.
All they think of it when they're consuming music is it's on television or it's on the radio in the car. And they never actually go in to see someone play live. And then I've had people like just break down when they see some, not just me, but I see them in the audience watching someone perform music for the first time live. And it's a really, really emotional experience for them because they never gave it the time, you know, to be the present and watch it happen.
I can't imagine.
We take it for granted because we're music fans. We've been doing it for years. But I would say the majority of people in the world, they don't consume music that way.
Well, I know that you have two more interviews today, so we'll let you go after one more song.
All right.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, too, by the way. This one is called Drive-In Movie. Take me to a drive-in movie. Put your body right next to me. Whisper promises to me. Roll the windows down. When you look at me like that, kiss me and I kiss you right back. Break your heart, give it to me. Take me to a drive-in movie.
take me on a long vacation, outbound from an old train station. Watch the world go by till we close our eyes in a sleeping car. Wake up in a brand new place. You're the only one who knows my face. Looking for a little salvation. Take me on a long vacation. Feel my heart turn over till I'm upside down, can't touch the ground, there's no gravity. I wanna feel my blood rush just like the first time we touch. I wanna fall over and over and over, take me on a roller coaster.
Chasing Beauty is Ellis Paul's new CD. You're going to have to come back because we didn't talk about how you got from New England down to Virginia and a whole lot of other stuff. So just drive it back up sometime.
All right. That would be great. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program this week and my conversation with Ellis Paul. As always, I look forward to your comments. And, you know, if you have any questions for Ellis, you can send them here, too. The email address is roots@voa.gov. That is roots@voa.gov. Ellis is all over the web, too. You can find him at ellispaul.com. And his name is spelled ELLISPAUL. I'm Catherine Cole. This is Roots and Branches on the VOA Music Mix Network.